Ladies and gentlemen, we are live back at the Old Dragon Dirtle podcast. The first, the only, and this is definitely not the second time we're making this podcast in a week. This is your host, Igor. And with me, as usual, my partner in crime, Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hi, Niksha.
And we managed to actually snag a person who hasn't been in our podcast in like a million years. Who's that mysterious person?
Hey, it's Peter from Nixith It Goes to Town, the funniest blog that never gets updated.
Sadly, even though I'm pressuring you all the time to make it, but you're busy being
yeah.
So what has been up with you, Peter, since you've been away for so long?
Oh, well, I have a rather amazing, interesting job as a game design lecturer at a university that makes sure I play Magic about, once a month these days. At the same time, because I'm teaching game design, it also means that all my Magic the Gathering purchases can be classed as classroom learning material and henceforth tax deductible.
It's brilliant. Wow. Isn't that like cheating?
No, of course not. But I mean, I really needed that playset of Lion's Eye Diamonds to show my class. And the Gaia's Cradles. Really needed them.
Guess I'll have to get all the Power 9 just to show the class.
Well,
he has
to show a practical example why they're called Power 9.
That's right. And I can't have Power 8. I need Power 9. I need to buy all 9 of them.
No, you need to buy all the copies of them.
Exactly right. Graded ones, too. Needs to be in mint quality.
So, Niksha, why are we recording this for the second time in a bloody week?
So, we did our recording already. But just as everything was going fine and dandy, my power went out, and we were like, okay, so we recorded half of it, and then we proceeded to do the other half, and it turns out that the first half got kind of corrupted and is unusable. And
okay,
by unusable, I mean, it for some reason, it recorded the first 3 seconds of our talk. And
good, we can use that.
And not the rest of the half of an hour or something like
that. Yeah, and before that we had problems with scheduling, and then Nix's DNS went to shit. This has been a week.
Quite a week, yeah. And here we are recording the first part.
Yet again, yeah. You'll hear the second part. That's already been recorded. The sound is nice and dandy. But we're going to rehash the same old topics yet over again.
Cool. So I want to be in the second part, so maybe I'll just give you some sound bites like, yeah, that's awesome. I love it. And you can just dub me into the parts of the second part. So the viewers never
there we know. Go. I'm going to use that. There we go.
Excellent.
But Peter, since you're the guest, what has been your Commander of the Week?
Commander of the Week should probably be more like Commander of the Year.
Yep.
So what I have been doing lately is I have fallen in love with a Vile Smasher Ludovic combo.
The what? We have heard of this Vile Smasher card, but this second one, we didn't hear that it actually exists. What?
Oh, Ludovic. Oh, right. Really interesting character from Innistrad who got kind of a derpy card, but it's basically kind of Grixis spells control.
He never got a card. No.
Yeah, it was okay. All right, fair enough. Was an imposter of Ludovic, because they gave a real character a really dodgy kind of card. But that card is sort of okay. It's not what we really wanted for Ludovic, but it's it kind of goes okay with Vile Smasher.
Why do you actually use him instead of like his opus or something like that?
It just draws random little cards. It doesn't cost very much, and pretty much I'm always doing damage every single turn. It's just like a Howling Mind that's just for me that goes and blocks 3 power creatures or less. Plus, it also motivates some of the other dudes to dudes in the game to pick on each other rather than pick on me, because he triggers off any kind of card draw from any damage for anyone that isn't me. So every once in a while, it'll be like, oh, I won't bother attacking you. I'll attack you because I got to draw a card off it. So it's a bit political in that sense as well. But two just seem to play really kind of fun together. And it's been my favorite deck for the better part of this year, simply because usually when I build a deck, I kind of sit there for hours and hours and days, and like, you know, if I sit there for 2 hours tweaking a deck and I manage to change like 2 cards, it's been a productive 2 hours. That's usually how I roll with it. But then my housemate, he's a pretty fanatic Commander player as well, and he put together a Vile Smasher Ludovic deck, and he's like, this works really great. And I'm like, yeah, that does look like fun. How about I slap together something like that, and I'll play you with it? And so rather than spending hours and days and you know, hundreds of tax-deductible dollars on Channel Fireball on buying brand new gas, I pulled all this stuff together and put something together in 15 minutes, and it turned out to be really, really fun. It's the fastest time I've ever made a deck, and it's just been... I've just been having a lull with it ever since.
So what, you just play old Del cards, bunch of, pyrokinesis stuff, and that's deck?
More or less. It's just Grixis big spells. So I was specifically looking at stuff that had... I was specifically pulling things in that had large mana costs. I can't remember if I put in too many things that let me cheat on the mana costs, but stuff like, you know, your basics, your Cruel Ultimatum, your Nicol Bolas Planeswalker, derpy things like Din of the Fireherd, ridiculously dumb stuff like Expropriate, and just big spells like that.
No Gush?
Sorry?
No Gush?
Oh my god, that's a brilliant idea. No Gush, but I'll have
Come
a Gush
on, man.
That much. Other things as well that work with converted mana costs, like I have a Wolf of Devil's Breach in there. Just
oh my
it's a
god.
Decent card, goes and burns, you know. Stuff that's, you know, those nice utility cards like the new Land Cyclist from Last Commander.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty good. I can pitch them for a land or I can cast them for a pretty good effect later in the game. Just things like that. And it's hilariously fun.
I haven't heard of Wolf of Devil's Breach since Nick Shanai did the previous episode for that set. That's the last time I heard of it.
I like to think of myself as the only person who actually played that card.
I mean, I'd play it if I had a derpy deck like that, but...
Yeah, it's such a derpy card, it's such a derpy deck, but it, curiously enough, the card just does some work. Occasionally, it just goes in and just mops up.
I mean, I think I'm soon going to build, like, Ragdos group slug decks. I'm going to put cards like that in it. Just to make all the big derpy spells then.
Yes. Rakdos group slug, I've been dreaming of something like that for a while. I tried to build a Mogus deck, but everybody hated me when I played Mogus. Right now, I'm looking at doing Scorpion God. I need to get a Scorpion God. I need to get things like Torment of Hailfire. But as soon as I do, I need to make Rakdos group slug.
So that's like three deductible dollars when you buy those two cards.
Yeah. Yeah, about three deductible dollars for that one. So, yeah. Not too much. I'll have to throw in, like, you know, some Time Spirals or Allurans in there as well, just to make it worth my while.
Did you try any Miracle cards in your
Smasher?
Deck? Oh, no, I don't think I had any lying around. Because if I would, I would have put in that, that's a really good idea. I would have put in Temporal Mastery if I had a chance, if I had one lying around. But that's actually a really good idea. I've got to part the Water Veil in there, because why not? Well, that's actually... I don't really have too many Miracle cards. And I don't think Black has any Miracle cards anyway. It's a Grixis deck, so... Yeah, I'd happily chuck in Temporal Mastery. Hell yeah.
But I mean, great idea. Nick should put those in his deck.
I actually put only one. It's the red one. It's Thunder...
Thunderous Wrath.
Yeah, Thunderous Wrath. Because suddenly, nice. If you Miracle it, it's one mana for 9 damage.
Yeah, that's pretty good. 9 or is it 11? Doesn't that thing cost like 6?
It costs 6 and it deals 3.
Isn't it 5, Thunderous Wrath?
It's 5?
Yeah, I think it's 5 damage,
oh,
Thunderous
Wrath. Then it's 8 damage for 1 mana. Still, pretty good deal.
And then you have your Murderous Cut and things like that, Dig Through Time.
Yeah, I don't have Murderous Cut or Dig Through Time. What did I put in there that was like... I know I had some... I had Treasure Cruise.
Oh, like, Treasure Cruise is nice.
Treasure Cruise is pretty cool. But
Dingy for 8, draw 2 cards.
I don't have Murderous Cut, so I couldn't chuck them in there. But that's actually a really good idea. I've got like a little discard thing going on, but I mean, really, if I had more time, I would have put it together and like really thought these things out and given the tax man more to worry about.
If you're going with some discard, put Siren Sanity in. 6 damage to a guy, everybody loses a hand.
That's a very dirty card. I don't like playing Siren Sanity because I worry I don't have any friends if I do, you know? Like, my housemate will out, nobody will keep coming over. You know, it'll just be me alone in my apartment forever then, just goldfishing to eternity. That's what Saradin says.
Are you goldfishing alone as a winner? You are, right? That's all that matters. You know,
yes. Well, you know, you goldfish, you always win anyway.
I lost once while goldfish.
Did you try to combo out and then fizzled?
No, I cast Glorious End and I didn't actually have that point.
I usually kill myself when I'm trying to cast Doomsday, so... Actually, I managed to cast Doomsday, and it all works, and then I somehow screw myself over.
I've heard about a Doomsday deck making the rounds, like a Grenzo Doomsday deck.
Oh, yeah, that's a really cheap one and easy one to make.
Yeah, I've heard it wins on, like, turn three, and I'm like, well...
You can if you have everything set up. The thing that
doesn't strike me as a good commander card, because it's just like just a stupid combo assembler.
But you actually have to go through the combo and have to defend the combo and all that. And you are, if you fail with the combo, on just 5 cards in the library.
I missed all of that. There was some interference. You sounded like...
So, Doomsday, even though it is, you know, really easy to win with, you still need to defend it, and if you fail to defend it, you only have 5 cards in library.
Yeah.
Plus, it can fizzle really easily.
Yeah.
I once casted Doomsday, and everything resolved. I couldn't win that turn, and the guy after me casted a Possibility Storm.
Yes.
That kind of screws over your Doomsday.
Yeah, it gives you a good opportunity to kill people with a Blue Sun Zenith. I will say that.
That is a point, yeah. So, yeah. Niksha, you have a Commander of the Week?
I do, and this time I remember to look at their names in advance. So, it's Kinaios and Tyro of Miletus, because I normally thought this deck wasn't really going to be like that strong, because it depends solely on putting out big stuff, but it turns out that when your playgroup gets a bit more casual than usual, they're kind of like too strong.
Because what Nick's trying to say when he's not playing with us assholes, things work out.
Yeah, it turns out that when people want to have more fun, they tend to cut down on spot removals, mass removals, and just focus on dirtling around. And
so many dirtle decks. They're great. I love it. I lose every time, but dirtling is so much fun.
But the thing about the Kinaios and the Tyro deck is they're not the usual group hug pillow fort deck. They're just big stuff because they ramp and draw cards, and that's like perfect for any big stuff deck.
Yeah, when we were previewing those guys, I think one of the things I said is just don't look at them as a pillow fort, just look at them as a control generals. Because you draw cards, you drop your land drops, and you're doing it fine.
Yeah.
This bug actually died?
What?
No, I was trying to throw a bug out yesterday, and it turns out that it got it stayed in the cup when I tried to throw it out. I didn't see that, and now it's dead. Oh, well.
Well, you murderer.
I tried to save it, so it's the thought that counts.
Put up a memorial service for the bug after the podcast. I mean, Adam. Let's
make him a small ship and then burn it and let it into the river. I think it deserves a Viking ship.
Minute silence for the bug.
Oh, actually, if we have a silence, then the program will cut it out.
Oh, so. I was going to say, the truncate silence is going to remove this, and we're going to sound really stupid, but that never stopped us before.
Okay, a minute of silence after the podcast.
I mean, yeah. So, KNT are doing their thing.
At the end of the podcast.
Anywho, Niksha, KNT were doing their stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you're coming to bring those guys today with you as well, or...?
I don't know. Maybe I'll see what 2 decks I'll bring or 3.
I mean, yeah, I'm bringing Commander with me, so there's bound to be a couple more people to play with.
Yep.
And now I'm supposed to do a Commander of the Week, right?
Yep.
Oh, I know what I'll talk about. So, Marco came to play with us, And we took out a bit more Dirtler decks. He got to play with Saskia. Tess played with Kalia. That's not that much upgraded. And I got to play with Angry Omnat. Turns out Perilous Forays is a fun card.
It is.
Yes, it is.
I basically sacked an elemental to get an elemental to bolt summon in face to do that whole loop, which killed all their permanents, all the creatures, and them in a turn.
Brutal.
That was fun. That is fun. If I had the amulet of...
Deck. I tried building one, but I couldn't get it to work. One, I don't have Perilous Forays. Two, it just felt like I have to get to 7 mana to do anything mildly relevant. Then once I get to 7 mana, I've got a general that just eats swords to plowshares all fucking day.
You mean since you're playing green, you get to 7 mana on turn like 4 or 5?
Since green? Yeah, I get that. But then after I get to, because all the cards I was using to ramp were land search, I use all my land search cards to get Angry Omnath. Angry Omnath comes into play. I've got no more land search cards. And then I'm kind of just sitting there with this giant, swords bait sitting right there. And I managed to accomplish very little most of the time. There are about maybe 120 games. I would be like, straight out of Omnath. I'd be like into Bountiful Realms or something silly like Elemental Mastery worked pretty well for that deck, or Tent with Vengeance that spawns out elemental tokens. But other than that, I would just find myself sitting there with a giant pile of lands and like one door. I tried to make it work so hard, but I did not like playing with Angry Omnath.
I don't know how I managed to make it work, but I'm not just focusing on Omnath. There's things like Soul Blast, there's, Overrun effects, things like that.
Yeah, I played Soul Blast too, because, that card is funny as hell.
Guess what card is actually really good when you have a bunch of men lying around, but no Omnath? Chameleon Colossus.
Yeah, that works.
One game, Tess was at, 45-ish life, and she managed to kill one guy, and she's like, okay, your turn, can you actually kill me, or do you have to kill me next turn? I was like, let me do the math, I'll hit you for 80. She was like, what?
Wow.
Turns out when you have enough mana for Chameleon Colossus... He kills people.
Yeah, he sure does.
Reminds me of
the stupid old Warhammer there. One prophet.
Wait, what? One at a time?
Go on.
You need a Loxodon Warhammer there, just for fun and profit.
Mm-hmm. What did you say, Niksha?
That reminds me so much of the stupid electrostatic pummeler in Standard.
You really hate energy, don't you?
It's not the pummeler that gets me. It's the stupid Hydra. I just can't do anything to that stupid card.
Because by the time they play it on turn 4, they already have 16 energy.
No, not 16, but it bumps them up to 9 energy, and then you can't do anything. You have to kill all their creatures, and then you have to have a Doomfall or something like
that. Yeah, that card is kind of stupid.
I'm just thinking about making a Grixis mono removal deck with a bolus finisher and just not allow anyone to have any fun ever again.
Niksha is starting to sound a lot like me when playing Commander.
He sounds like a broken man. He's now, it's no more Dirtling, it's now, I'm just going to punish you all.
Oh, that's the attitude I adopted. Because fun is a zero-sum game, and there is a limited amount of it, and I want to have all the fun. Henceforth, nobody gets to have any fun besides me.
That is true bolus thinking. Well done, guys. I love it.
Speaking of bolus, do we want to talk about the first topic at hand, Niksha?
Oh, yeah. I was just running through my things because Soulfire? Soul Blast.
Soul Blast, yeah.
Wait, no. Soul Blast is not the thing. No.
Soul Blast is 3 red instant. As an additional cost to cast it, sacrifice all the dudes you have. And it deals damage equal to all power combined together to creature or player.
No, I was thinking about the card Soul Fire, I think. The one that deals damage equal to target creature's power.
Oh, yeah, that's an actually good card. We don't play that. No.
It says that target creature deals damage equal to its power to a player or creature.
Yes.
Well, it turns out that I use that conjunction with Charnel Horde Worm, because his trigger just gets it back It's fun.
Yeah, and then it just reminded me about Soulfire. I sent you the picture the other day on Facebook. Basically, a really bad MTG combos. You get a wall of blood, you pay 10 life for it, you cast Tainted Strike on it, and then you Soulfire. Because guess what? It's doing its damage as Infect.
Yay.
It's a stupid, retarded combo, but if somebody loses to it, they kind of deserve it.
Oh, that's great. I never thought of that Charnel Horde Worm, though. That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
If you put some derpy enchantment on it, like Burning Anger or Power of Fire, and just leave it as a pinger, you can just total... It's like Eternal Witness on a stick. That's beautiful.
That, and you put the Seedborn Muse and do it every turn.
That's brilliant. I know way back in the days, when it was Legends, way old school, like 20 years ago, Magic 20 years ago, there were really derpy combos that used, the original Nicol Bolas, the original one from Legends, when he deals damage to hand. It used to be a set of reanimated decks that reanimated him and put Fire Whip on him, which Fire Whip was just pretty much like Power of Fire, but from Weatherlight. Tap, discard hand, tap, discard hand.
Yeah, compare reanimated decks of today with that deck.
Yeah, now you just kind of reanimate Jin Gataxias and just do the discard hand for free.
Either that or just, Gristlebrand, and you just draw extra couple of hands. Because why not?
Yeah, why not?
So, we were going to talk about Bolas, weren't we?
Sure, yeah.
So, first we'll talk about Happy Things. Peter, did you read the last story from our Devastation?
I haven't read the stuff that's on the website, but I bought the art book. You know how they give you that big, fancy, polished art book? And I read through it there. So whatever's in the art book is the stuff I've read. So no play-by-play accounts, but I know the broad outline.
Okay, this is actually great. We are going to give you the actual play-by-play. Aren't we, Niksha?
Yeah.
So, you know how the story starts? First sentence of this story. Nicol Bolas flew towards the heroes, eager to kill someone today. That's the beginning of the story.
Sounds like a pretty good story.
Yeah, and it devolves into Nicol Bolas almost twirling his mustache and doing the villainy stuff.
Brilliant. I love Nicol Bolas. I was so thrilled to see him get, not just come back, but actually have his own set.
Oh, this story makes him... I liked him before this story, but now I actually love him.
Oh, brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loves villain.
So, wait.
Are we having a minute silence for the bug again?
I don't know. My headphones just died. Now it changed to a different headset.
Oh, that's sad.
Anywho. So, Nicol Bolas would, either kill all the planeswalkers or just have something better. And now another quote. He did not expect to have both. One could not have everything, not even Nicol Bolas. He was not greedy. Greed implies wanting something he didn't deserve. Everything Nicol Bolas wanted was entirely deserved. And then he meets the Gatewatch. He sees them. He sees the telepathic ripple that Jace is making and communicated with him. And Nicol Bolas is like, I could, read their plans. But that just wouldn't be fun now, would it?
Yes. Plans. That is something that people do.
Let's call it plans what they had.
Yeah. They probably had plans like kill the dragon or burn the dragon. I mean, they're not very good plans, but...
We can be generous and call them plans.
Admittedly, burn the dragon, burn the Eldrazi worked, which I was somewhat disappointed in.
But Peter, you love this quote. They fancy themselves the Gatewatch. As though for some bizarre reason there were gates scattered throughout the multiverse that deserved watching.
Brilliant.
The heroes, Nicol Bolas thought. Bless them each and every one. Just like you can actually imagine him with a southern accent having the colonel from KFC suit and just walking about.
Brilliant.
Oh, and there was, I can't find it right now, but there is, one part where he, totally meta'd the story and said that, the only thing keeping their idiocy alive was pure luck.
Yeah, basically, the universe conspired to keep them alive because that's stupid.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm so happy to see this Gatewatch go.
Oh, and now we're going to
hell.
Now we're going to the actual, you know, destroying of the Gatewatch. First, he fought with Jace. And Jace, yep, for some stupid reason, tried to enter his mind. And, you know,
plan. Congratulations.
That was
it again.
Basically, wait, I'm trying to find a quote. Oh, yeah. If you want a then child, you merely needed to ask, said Nicol Bolas, and allowed him to enter the mind. And that just crushed him.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and then
there was like a giant tidal wave of nothingness approaching Jace's mind, and he recognized it as, you know, an actual representation of being brain dead, and he just planeswalked away in sheer terror of that.
So, and after that, he planeswalks away, and Nicol Bolas retorts, that was your mind expert, I believe. Do you have a spare? I can wait, or I can promise not to listen if you shout at each other. And while he's saying that, he has Gideon trapped in his tail, and he's bouncing him off the wall. Just smash, smash, smash.
Kind of like that scene from The Avengers, where Thor, well, not Thor, but Hulk smashes Odin around. Well,
Loki.
Loki, yeah. My god. It's early in the... So, where he smashes him around, except Nicol Bolas is talking with the rest of them while he's smashing him around.
He's calm, collected, and cool while he's smashing a planeswalker left and right. Gideon has his shields that's keeping, you know, safe, but still. And he manages to, you know, talk Liliana into joining him, because either I'm going to kill you all or you're going to join me. So
she did the sensible thing.
I mean, she offered the Gatewatch, we should just run away from him. They were like, no, 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 we'll fight him. Like, what the hell?
Huh. So Liliana's stuck with Bolas now.
Yeah, because he offered her to teach her how to use the Chain Veil without, you know, being possessed by Onake spirits.
Or killed.
Cool.
So,
I'm looking forward to this fourth demon that she has to fight. Mm-hmm.
So Liliana leaves. Nicol Bolas retorts. And then there were three. I didn't want to annoy your dear departed necromancer, but between us, I know a fair bit of necromancy. Do you have an opening in your Gatewatch? Is there some type of application process? Like, come on.
Brilliant.
I mean, they should have just printed Oath of Bolas as a joke in the set.
Oh, by the way, Peter, Nicol Bolas saw what they were trying to do to him. He almost clapped, but he remembered, oh, my talons are actually in the way for me to clap. But imagine him slow clapping to Gatewatch.
I need to read this.
Mm-hmm.
So snarky.
Yeah, Chandra tries to burn Bolas, and she does some damage.
Burn, you can't do anything else.
Oh, and then Chandra, you had so many useful characteristics: powerful, emotionally unstable, easy to manipulate, refreshingly predictably unpredictable. I really wanted to make this work. And then he goes to the sky. But fire against a dragon? A dragon. I have standards. And then he almost crushed her, but then Nyssa, you know, went in. And he continued to crush Chandra, and then she just planeswalked.
Yeah, a couple of cracked ribs. But yeah. It's survivable.
And Nyssa got hentai'd, and that's, you know, most what had happened.
This is meant to be... What are they doing with the audience? Goodness me.
I mean, Nyssa tried to manipulate the land in Bolas' land. That doesn't work.
Yeah, no. God, I've just got this horrible image in my head of Nyssa, you know, in the same pose as, you know, that Japanese painting, Dream of the Fisherman's Wife. Oh, mm-hmm. Dear.
Mm-hmm. And then there was just one left. Gideon. Oh,
the one I really hate. Good.
Oh, yeah. Basically, Gideon was like, you will not win. We will beat you. Will not win. Will not win. Bolas laughed. Gideon Jura, you are very bad at analyzing reality. I have fought against thousands of generals, thousands of tacticians and strategists and battle masterminds. You might be the worst. Let me help you. Ignoring obvious reality is a fatal flaw in our line of work. By all means, I understand the importance of aspirations. But being able to accurately assess the facts in front of you is an essential skill in the trade. And then he tries to fight, you know, Bolas, but Bolas just
pierces his golden armor. Like, I can kill you at any time, but, you know, just, you just go away. You're not even worthy of my time.
Yeah, he let him live just to show him how useless he is.
Mm-hmm. But that actually strengthened him. Gideon's resolve. He was like, okay, I'll learn from this and actually fight him again later with a proper plan, which they should have done. I mean, Jace was all for, you know, actually not fighting Bolas, which was the sensible idea. But Gideon was way too blinded by passion.
It's like, I mean, mm-hmm. stupid thoughts like that.
And then, Nixia, what is the epilogue of the story?
Oh, the epilogue. Oh, man. Oh, man. So, should we really spoil it for Peter?
Oh, yeah, let's actually not do that. Peter will read the story on his own.
Yeah, because this isn't in the art book.
I'm sending the story to Peter right now.
I'm all game. All right, okay, you want me to read this now?
No. You read it in your own leisure time. You'll enjoy the whole story and Bolas being snarky and all that.
All right. You can spoil me now. You can give it to me now. That'd be great.
Oh, okay, Nisha, then spoil him.
All right.
So, in the end, Tezzeret planeswalks in, and Nicol Bolas said something about being late, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And at one point, Tezzeret looked at him quizzically, but knew he would offer no more explanation. And then he proceeds to say, Master, I should update you on later. Later, Bolas said, go and tell Ral Zarek to come to me. His progress is too slow. I was like, what?
Nice.
Ral Zarek works for Bolas?
Oh, badass. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And Brilliant.
Bolas has finally stopped working in the shadows and is actually openly doing his plan, whatever the hell the plan is.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm kind of wondering if he's going to pop up in the Dominaria set for next year.
Could his whole
scheme be retake Madara? Because he was the God Emperor there, because it had like shitloads of mana before that, you know, dick that had a Jitte named after him actually killed him somehow. I don't know. I haven't read those books, but he somehow did it. I'm kind of wondering if he pops up as like the main antagonist of the Dominaria set.
That's not the dick that the Jitte is named after, though.
Umezawa.
Yeah, but Tetsuo Umezawa, the guy who kills Bolas, is a far descendant of Toshiro.
Yeah, he was a descendant. Okay, fair enough. He was a descendant, but he was still around. He still says the name of that stupid Jitte, and I played back in Kamigawa Ravnica standard block, so I hate that Jitte with passion.
What do you have against our favorite Planeswalker artifact equipment?
The Jitte?
Yes, it's a Planeswalker artifact equipment.
I can't stand it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. It skews games in every possible direction. It's ridiculous.
I mean, whenever you play a Jitte, yes, the games become unfair. Nix and I managed to have a Jitte versus Jitte standoff one game.
Oh my god, how are you two still alive?
My Jitte was online faster, I think that's how we won.
Wow, you two shouldn't be just talking coherently after having a Jitte standoff. You should be like chained up in padded rooms, gibbering and drawing, like, you know, scrolls over the wall.
Oh no, there was also Prosh involved in that game, so that was all the fun.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, really, one of you should still be in that cell, like, drawing arcane symbols on the wall, talking about how the Elder Gods will come and spell doom, you know?
Oh, Peter, look.
Like, +2/+2.
Nobody said that any of us were actually sane.
Yeah, but I mean, you're more coherent than they could be expected after an encounter like that, you know.
Look, cocaine is a hell of a drug. That's all I'm going to say.
So is the Jitte.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Once you swing with your stupid 1/1 and it deals damage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just two more counters. Just two for the road.
The worst part about Jitte is when you don't remove any counters, and the opponent looks at you and you have like 8 of them. And they're like, okay, what do I do now?
Like, anything. I could
have owned a Jitte. I've never played with one. I've only played against them. And I've done that so many times. It's just like, oh, I can't stand it. It's not banned from my house because I don't think it's that powerful. It skews commander games. But when you're playing standard or legacy, it's just terrible.
Peter, you should get a copy and play with it, just to, you know, feel the power.
Should get a copy and wipe my butt with it. That's what I should get. I'll feel power.
You mean tax deductible butt
wiper?
That's
right. Tax deductible expensive butt paper. That's what it is.
Wow. Australian laws are really, really fun, it seems.
Yeah, it's good.
So, Niksha, what's the next thing on our schedule? Do we go to the sad parts, or...?
Do we have to go over it again? Oh, man.
I mean, just a bit more sportsmanship and all that.
Yeah,
so really,
Peter, yeah, go on.
Peter, did you actually catch any of the Pro Tour in Kyoto?
No, I didn't. I kind of missed it. I know the deck that won it was that Ruminap Red, which I was pretty happy about because I kind of bought some Azerets as a spec. Like, you know, it's kind of cheap right now. I reckon this card's going to be good because it did pretty well earlier this year, buying Walking Ballistas at $2 each. So, I thought, okay, what am I going to take here? I'm going to take Hazarets. I'm going to buy them at $7 each. And then they dropped down to $5, and I'm like, oh, this is sad. This is sad. Maybe I spec'd wrong. Nope, it's good. I've already sold 4 for like the price I bought all 12 at. So I'm pretty happy.
Did you see the punt that happened at the Pro Tour?
The pun?
The punt. Punt.
Punt. No, I didn't see any punt. So, that was my punt. Buying Hazarets, at least.
Paluito Dama de Rosa is playing against Ving, or whatever his name is. I can't remember. They're both playing Mono Red.
Yeah.
And they both have 2 games each, one. Yeah. If Paulo untaps, he wins the game because he can just deal him enough damage.
Yeah.
The guy has Hazaret out. He has one burn spell in hand. He draws Savage Alliance. So with all that damage, he can just, you know, he can do exact damage with those two cards and Hazaret.
Yeah.
He gets really excited. He's going to go to the finals of the Pro Tour. He goes to the combat phase, taps Hazaret and looks at 2 sorcery speed cards in his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that the punt that costed him, you know, the finals of the Pro Tour, and it was sad. And some people started bashing on the poor guy, you know, but have you ever had those situations in Magic where you just get too excited and do a stupid blunder?
It has. I'm still trying to understand exactly what the blunder is. He thought it was instant, right?
No. He had 2 sorceries in hand. 2 cards in hand. What is the Hazaret condition to attack? Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
If he casted any one of them, he would have won the game.
Oh, my God.
But he drew the card. He was so happy to draw the card. He was shaking visibly. He just swung wildly. Hazaret, I think, even flipped once. Hazaret.
Oh, and, no.
And then he figured it out.
Oh, no. Poor guy.
Mm-hmm. Some people are bashing on him, but honestly, we all did bigger mistakes for no money at line.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Niksha, what was your take?
I mean, it just really feels so bad.
And there was then another group of people who made me even more pissed, who said that Paluito Dama de Rosa only went to the finals because of this thing. That was, you know, he was lucky enough. That's Paluito Dama de Rosa, you know, the Hall of Famer, the 12-time top 8er, 2-time one Pro Tour, that guy, you know. He just has luck in Magic.
Oh, of course. He's pretty lucky. Yeah.
I mean, come on, give guy some credit. He might be one of the top 3 best players in Magic of all times.
Yeah. Well, top 3 luckiest, because it takes a lot of luck to win Pro Tour twice.
Yeah, we all know how lucky John Finkel was.
Yeah, no, he was super lucky. God damn it. Why did he play Magic and not lotteries if he's that lucky? What a dumbass.
Yeah.
I mean, he's some kind of financial advisor, so that's almost, you know, playing luck, but, you know.
He's a hedge fund manager, apparently.
Oh, yeah. It's something.
Yeah.
So, after we pass through this sadness, let's talk about more happier stuff. The Hascom promos?
You saw them, right?
I seen them. I forgot what 2 of them are, but I know Sword of Dungeons and Dragons is meant to be in the new Unset that's coming out next year, later this year. And I'm actually really quite excited for that Unset. I saw did you guys see the posts that Mara revealed of like what the different factions are and what the thing is?
Yes.
Oh my God. I was thinking Unset again. Okay. But when I saw that, it looks like Ravnica's an Unset. And apparently it was cards specifically designed for casual and commander. And I'm like, fuck yes. And I don't care about rules. I'm packing some silver bordered cards all the way. There's some silver bordered cards that I would like to play in regular commander decks. Like, you know, you guys know Zizzax's Abyss?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a card. I would happily play Zizzax's Abyss. Or it's not too crazy. It's just a silly card that's kind of fun. Or, okay, the silliest card I think that I have played with is yet another Aether Vortex.
Oh, that I just wanted to mention that card. I played with it as well.
It's so dumb, especially when you're like when you have like control magic effects where you can actually steal cards out of players' libraries. It's just like it's weird.
it's just such a fun card.
But
so
yeah. Strange.
So cool.
The promos haven't just been revealed, they have also been already sold at the site. That's sad. But, Niksha, what are the promos? Just go quick through them.
So we have Swords of Dungeons and Dragons, which gives equipped, which is a sword, you know, +2/+2. It has costs three equips for two. And it has, equipped creature has protection from rogues and clerics, and when it hits a player, you get a 4/4 gold dragon, and you roll a d20. On a natural 20, you gain another. You repeat this process, so that's quite fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a sword, and ninjas like swords, so
yeah.
And pirates.
Niksha, now read the nerf war, because the middle one we're keeping for the actual discussion.
So nerf war is a card that it's a sorcery, for 3 blue red. It says that you fire at a deck until you empty your clip of an official nerf gun, and for each card you knock off the library, that player mills that card and loses half a life. So yeah, it doesn't you have to do it at a distance of 2 meters away
at least.
So yeah, nothing's stopping you if you have official Nerf gun products to use like a Nerf minigun and just go to town on every deck you see in the whole store.
Okay. Now there's this thing, right? Like we actually used to play like a couple years ago. We used to actually have Nerf wars. Like like we used to have it like in a mate's backyard where he lived at the time. And it was just a phase we went through where we bought a whole stack of Nerf guns, and rather than go out to a bar on Friday nights, we would actually just set up like a little arena and stuff like that, you know, in the backyard with like, you know, fences and things like that and cover, and we would have Nerf guns. And it was so fucking fun. It was like paintball without the pain. But, the thing is, you can mod those Nerf guns, and we had those Nerf guns. There was like, I forgot the name of the specific type of gun, but we had it modded, as in, you know, you pull out the firing pin, you rejig and rub a couple of rubber bands or something like that, and you can get a good range of like 20 meters and solid stop out of that gun just right there. And the thing holds like 30 bullets. So nobody's, you know, this Nerf War thing, I think that's just like, if you played that as an actual card and you took one of these guns in, you know, you could just win the game straight up there and then, because I'm imagining, how are you going to knock off like 2 cards of a player's library with a Nerf gun? You're going to knock the whole library off the fucking table, like splat, boom, you know? Especially when you're looking at like a commander game when like, what, you know, your library's like size of normal. Don't aim at the fucking top card, you retard. Aim at the bottom, send the whole library flying, aim at the next player, and you've got fucking 35 bullets in that clip. I mean, come on, you're going to win the game. You got plenty of bullets to shoot them in the head, too.
Peter, you forgot to do one thing.
What?
Fork the spell.
Sorry?
Fork it and twin cast it.
Yeah.
So you can kill it, more people.
If you fork it, that means you need to have 2 Nerf guns. So you can like duel.
I fail to see the problem with that.
Oh, I think everybody I would play the game with would see the problem with that. I'd have a great time.
I mean, yeah.
As a side note, Niksha, the minigun, the Nerf minigun's crap. The pump action shotgun, though, much better. That's the one you can mod. The electric motor that shoots things out, you're never going to get the stopping power. You're only going to get like 10, 15 meters off the minigun. Whereas if you buy the shotgun, you mod it, you're going to get like 20 meters, you know, 20 meters plus, and it hits hard, too. So get those things.
So basically, you sit at a table, you sit with your Mizzix, and you're like, guys, don't worry, I don't have any combos in this deck. And then
yeah, you, no, You can just, you know, you can, like, then when you play Nerf War, just, like, throw your trench coat open so you've got a whole bunch of Nerf guns there, like they do in the Matrix elevator scene. Just.
This is a great style.
And magic.
And now, next show, let's talk about the commander.
So we have Grimlock Dinobot Leader, who is one, and then red, green, white. It's a legendary artifact creature Autobot that says dinosaurs, vehicles, and other Transformers creatures you control get +2/+0. And for two, and convert a Transformers toy you own to its other mode, Grimlock Dinobot Leader becomes Grimlock Ferocious King. And Grimlock Ferocious King is an 8/8 trampler. With, of course, you pay 2 and convert a Transformers toy back to its original mode, and it becomes Dinobot Leader.
But why is this important, Nixon?
Well, except for the fact it gives dinosaurs +2/+0 and vehicles +2/+0, it also gives Transformers +2/+0. But somebody asked Maro, by giving Transformers +2/+0, does Grimlock give all creatures with Transform +2/+0? And his answer is, Transformer is defined as either a character from the Transformer universe that is a Transformer, or a creature that transforms, meaning any double-faced cards that uses the Transform keyword action. Which means that werewolves finally got a commander.
Yeah, suck on these nuts, Ulrich. Yeah.
It also means the Wizards of the Coast Hasbro merger is now officially complete.
I mean, they are one.
Well, they are now one. That is it.
But the important thing is you can actually have an actual good commander for your Werewolf Tribal. That is not Ulrich Tar.
Ulrich, you know, such a disappointment.
Ulrich is good in the 99 in some decks, but he's not good as a commander.
I believe he is. I don't think Ulrich is a bad card at all. It's just they are, you know, it's just as a commander, as a Werewolf commander, I was more disappointed when I saw him than some of my students were with the marks I gave them this trimester.
Wow. Get wrecked.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how pricey these guys will be.
I mean, the pack of all four cards is $30.
It is, and on the site.
Technically, none of these are playable, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, technically, but, you know, people are going to be cool with, you know, having a Grimlock Dinobot Leader as a commander.
People are definitely...
not that I'm worried about. How many times can people get shot before they start whinging?
I mean, only one way to find out.
Yep, true.
But it would be really nice if you could get the Dinobot Leader for like some good amount of money, but let's face it.
The Sword of Dungeons and Dragons is going to be in the unset, so it's not going to be hard to get it. But one more thing I wanted to mention about the unset is that they mentioned ninjas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? Yes. I heard they mentioned contraptions. Like, we finally get contraptions. Like, Steam Flogger Boss is not the only blackboarded card in the set. That I find interesting.
I mean, it has to be because it's already a blackboarder card, so...
Yeah.
So, they said that the Agents of Sneak will have, like, rogues and thieves and ninjas. And, you know, they're going to be the Inspector Gadgets. But without the inspecting, just the gadgets.
And what does this mean? That Nixon is going to have a bunch of silver bordered cards in his ninja deck.
Nice.
And I hope they have ninjutsu.
I mean, that would be nice. I really hope they reprint ninjutsu one of these days, but with a different name.
Well,
like, you know, sneak attack or some shit like that.
Sure.
Also, ninjas in an unset. Have you guys seen that that ad for Snickers with Mr. Bean?
No.
Yes.
Yeah, you've seen that? I don't know if it's an international ad, but it's pretty prolific over here. It's basically a TV ad with a bunch of ninjas sneaking across a roof, and one of the ninjas just happens to be Mr. Bean. And he falls off, and he falls into a roof, and the enemy's like, oh, silly me. And the ninjas are like, oh, you're so bad when you're hungry, eat a Snickers. And so Mr. Bean eats a Snickers, and he transforms back into a regular ninja, and he starts kicking...
It's much better the one with Betty White, though, because it's Betty White.
Betty White.
You didn't see that one?
That.
So basically, you see a bunch of guys playing touch-go football in USA.
Yeah.
And you see Betty White, you know, throwing, man, you play like a girl. That's not what your girlfriend told me last night. But Betty White yells to people, dude, come on, eat a Snickers. Why? Because you throw like a girl when you're hungry. Okay. And Betty White eats a Snickers and becomes, you know, a normal guy. And how is Betty White still alive? That's a question.
Yeah. Preservatives in her cooking, that's how.
Like, goddamn. She's way old. But there was an anchorman in Croatia who's been old when I was a young kid, and he's still alive for some reason.
Wow.
Yeah, sounds like my chemistry teacher. I don't know of her right now, but when I was going to school, she was very old, and my teacher in elementary school went to the same high school, and she said she was ancient back then. So
wow,
that's like wow.
She took enough embalming fluid, and she's fine now.
That's it.
But yeah. So
like one of the boluses Eternals, she's like that.
She took enough Lazotep, and she's fine now.
That's it.
We have just one more thing.
Take Lazotep. Sign up today.
You don't serve bolus as nimbly efficiently enough when you're hungry. Take some Lazotep.
That's it.
We have one more thing to go through, right?
Yeah, I think.
So, we have unofficially confirmation of what the last tribe is for Commander 17.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
So, it's apparently going to be Grixis Wizards from some Japanese magazine.
I saw that. I'm in favor. I'm actually kind of excited for Grixis Wizards. Obviously, being a dragon man, I'm going to go, you know, apeshit for the dragons straight away. But, like, I love the dragons. Cats is great. And hearing it's Grixis Wizards, well, that's sick. I mean, my Vile Smasher, not really Ludovic deck I had, I was talking about earlier. I mean, if there's a good enough commander, I mean, saying good enough to replace Vile Smasher, that's something. But if there's a good enough commander, I could use that.
I hope that there isn't a good enough commander to replace Vile Smasher, because Vile Smasher was already stupid.
Vile Smasher is fucking bullshit. Yeah.
The first
thing I heard when I read about these forums is that, you know, one thing I heard was maybe we'll actually get a proper Ludovic in Grixis Colors.
Let's not hold our breath. There is a really good talk.
I mean, there's always hope.
There is a really good comment on top of the Reddit thread about this. Well, in fairness, the company isn't named Clerics of the Coast. I'm just, yeah. And then a comment, this reminds me of some comment LLC made in some old Cube Draft video, when he was torn between picking Dimir Signet and Channel early on. Then he picked Channel and said, well, it's not called Dimir Signet Fireball. LLC with the puns. LLC with the puns.
Oh my god.
He's the national treasure.
He will make a perfect dad.
Oh yeah, just the puns that he makes and then reactions of people around him are the best.
Yep.
Just physical whinge, just But yeah, Niksha, which one of you are going to pick?
I'm thinking about all of them.
I mean, yeah.
But of course I'm in favor of the dragons. And the second in line are vampires, but I'm not a fan of vampires, but Edgar Markov is confirmed to be the vampire lord.
Yes, I was going to ask about that. Vampires are the one I'm least interested in as well, but yeah, Edgar Markov, that's going to be interesting. So
yeah, I'm also going to pick up wizards because I already have a Mardu deck, and cats and dragons aren't exactly my thing, so...
And of course, maybe we'll get an interesting wizard commander for a change.
I don't know, Zami's quite interesting.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, anyway, I'm going to get all four because, you know, tax deductible.
So. Yep, tax deductibles. That might just be the name of the episode, honestly.
Brilliant. So as long as the Australian government never watches it, it's okay. Anyway, I use all this stuff in classrooms, so it's good. All classrooms. Like I take like all the stuff I buy, I actually take it and use it as a material in my classroom, like How to Goldfish using Gaia's Cradle and Mox Diamond and Lion's Eye Diamond.
How does it actually help the class? Full series.
Game mechanics. Learn how they work at high levels of play.
Did you teach them what not to do?
Yes. Like,
free resources are bad.
Yeah, teach them that Lion's Eye Diamond is a bad card and that, you know, discarding your hand is a terrible thing. So if you have any, you should have given them to me.
I mean, honestly, it was a really, really bad card.
It was. Once upon a time, it was a terrible dog shit, bull fart, crap gas. But now, for some reason, it's like...
Some reason, huh?
Yeah, I know. For some reason, some stupid broken... Oh, you know. Anything with free mana or anything that's free, what's it called, is like... It just ends up getting broken.
If lots it untaps mana. Lines, it's also kind of broken.
Sorry?
If it untaps lines, it's also kind of broken.
Yeah, that too. It's always a way to abuse things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, things like that get banned in Pauper and other formats.
Oh my god, I'm sick of Peregrine Drake. Good god.
It's banned. It's banned in
Pauper now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. It's been a long time since Pauper, but I mean, I see that thing in Commander now because, you know, when Peregrine Drake, like, you know how it was before Modern Masters, they reprinted Peregrine Drake, they had Palancrons everywhere. Mm-hmm. And Palancron landed at my house because fuck you, Palancron. But then Peregrine Drake, and now it suddenly becomes the Deadeye Peregrine Drake Commander combo. It just becomes accessible to everybody, and I'm like, fuck off.
Now, repeat after me. In response to the Soulbound trigger, you do a thing.
In response to Soulbound trigger, I stand up, open my trench coat, pull out my modern nerf guns, and aim at his head.
There you go. Or you can just, you know, play a kill spell and kill. Honestly, I have never had problems with Data Navigator.
Oh, what planet are you on, mate?
The guy made an infinite combo with mana. And I looked at him and I was like, okay, what do you do now? And he was confused because people usually scoop to infinite mana. He played the new Emrakul. He took my turn. And even though that there was an Anafenza and Murderous Fatcap and a Sec outlet out on the field, he didn't actually know there was an Anafenza in my hand. He didn't do anything. He just, you know, makes some stupid attacks and that was it. He gave me my turn and I was like, okay, I'm going to play a Sec outlet now. Now you die. Moral of the story is let people play their combos if, you know, they can.
Well, most of the time when I face an infinite combo, they can actually kill you right then and there. Last time I saw Peregrine Drake Deadeye Navigator, there was a Thrasios on the board. And then the Thrasios just let him stack his entire library pretty much, draw out everything it needed to, and that was that. So, and then somehow through a bunch of windfall effects, he killed us all with, that was it, Sphinx's Tutelage. That was it. That was the kill card right there.
It sounds to me like you need to kill more stuff.
Yeah, like people who play that combo.
I mean, I'm honestly just gunning more for the cards they play than people, but you know.
Yes, I don't know. I'm a bit more brutal than that.
We get sundered quite often in our playgroup. Proj does the food chain stupid things.
When I first played Primal Surge and said, I win, and then you were like, okay, show me how.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then I showed you how.
I trust that you have a combo kill, but I have to see it.
Oh, okay.
Because
Prime Surge top deck sorcery, you know.
Oh no! That's the only sorcery he has. That's only non-permanent he has in the deck. But I need to see the combo because the story we often tell is: do you know what LSV played the Storm in one tournament? Yeah. But he forgot to, you know, actually put Tendrils of Agony inside his deck or sideboard. He forgot to do that and he was like, okay, what do I do now?
Did he make a plan about
Storm
it?
No, he made the Storm combo. Storm for 9. I could, you know, just turn us back on you. And they're like, yeah, okay, I get it. People would scoop premature before he even played the thing. He went to win that tournament.
Wow.
After that story, I'm like, okay, show me how you kill me. Because people can actually fuck things up just like that.
Yeah. And so that Primal Surge is the part of my 99 card combo Karador. And actually, there is one way to stop the combo, and that's sudden death. That's like literally the only card that can stop it because it's split second.
A Torpor Orb? Things like that?
No, Torpor Orb doesn't prevent that vampire dude from
sacking
everything, you know, then Jara just flinging.
What about Humility?
I guess it stops it, but nobody plays Humility.
I should really play Humility.
I've seen Humility played a few times. And there's that new one, Overwhelming Splendor.
Oh, Nixxuk has a story about that card.
Oh,
And somebody getting stabbed violently in the car park. That's how I imagine.
No.
It's much more mad. It's a lot less bloodthirsty than. So, what happened in the tournament? I mean, at the pre-release, somebody actually got Overwhelming Splendored, and they had God Pharaoh's Gift on the field. And then there was the question if, is the guy a 4-4 with haste, or is he a 1-1 with haste, or is he just a 1-1 without anything? And then that's where I came in like, okay, so here's how timestamps work.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't need to learn about timestamps, but...
Until that point.
Mm-hmm. I just informed myself about timestamps just because to know more stuff about Magic.
Yeah, it's like those timestamp things, they get kind of weird and awkward because I used to play Blood Moon a lot in Legacy, and then it's just getting silly like that. Actually, the funniest thing I did with judges was I had a Chaos deck that ran, the Grip of Chaos, Confusion the Ranks combo. I think it's the best combo in Magic. I think it's the best combo in Magic. And then, like, you obviously know what happens when you have two of them together, but the question was at the time, what happens when you have two confusions? Like, does one permanent enter the battlefield? Does one permanent enter the battlefield steal two permanents, or does it steal one, then steal another? And what order those things sequence themselves in? And I was just playing it casually at the shop, and as it happened, there were the two highest ranking judges in Australia there. So, like, judge, what happens? And I had them arguing together for like 20 minutes about what happens. Two level 3 judges arguing for 20 minutes about how this thing actually works.
Basically how to break a judge.
Yeah, pretty much. How to break a judge. Confusion of the ranks. That's it.
Good God.
And apparently I have I still have a casual multiplayer deck that plays that with every other fucked up Magic card in existence, you know, with Shared Fate, Knowledge Pool, Risky Move. Yeah, it's like, it just wins by confusing players beyond the point of no return. If you look at my blog, at one of the very first posts I ever wrote, it was like the Outrageous Games and Ludicrous Kills article. I have a game that actually, where I managed to play most of the cards that were in that deck, including Enter the Dungeon, where I managed to actually convince people to play Magic under the table. Yeah, it was just madness. That was my point. I was trying to, apparently if you build a deck like that in Magic Online, the game crashes.
To be fair, sometimes when you play Ponder, the Magic Online crashes, so you know.
Alright, fair enough, okay. Can't claim the game as much as possible, but yeah.
There is a new bug. Rachel Agnes was playing a Vintage in a tournament online. She casted Misdirection, and the next game... The game just bugged out and restarted itself over and over and over.
Now that's real misdirection right there.
That's MTGO.
Did you see they're going to unveil more info about Magic the Gathering Arena?
Whatever the hell that turns out to be.
Yeah.
So that's their Magic Digital Next.
I'm skeptical about that.
Yeah.
I mean, people are suspecting it's going to be... Pokemon TCG Online.
Anything's gonna be better than, you know, MTGO.
I mean, Pokemon TCG Online is actually, like really well made. And...
Oh yeah, it's actually real good. The interactions work.
That's always a start.
Yeah, interactions work. Okay, sometimes some interactions don't work, and then they just turn off the cards until they're fixed.
As you should.
At least in Magic Online, you can just play Humility, and that'll do the same thing.
No, in Magic Online, you just wait until either Brian Kibler or LSV have a bug, and then you fix it. Because that, the ponder bug that caused you to sometimes not, you know, do the thing you wanted to, existed for a long time, and then LSV had it in a tournament, and suddenly later got fixed real fast.
Oh, wow. That's not favoritism at all, is it?
Oh, well. Or whenever Brian Kibler complains about something, it gets fixed.
Wonder if I can make him complain about Gristlebrand.
What do you mean?
Gristlebrand. I hate Gristlebrand. Or Jitte. Alancron. I'll send Brian Kibler a list, actually, of cards I've banned, house banned at my house.
I'm sure he's going to listen to you.
He will, buddy. Because I'm playing Nerf War next time I play. He'll listen to that.
Yeah, well, Kibler's pretty chill.
Yeah, but he's mostly in Hearthstone now, isn't he? Yeah. That might be the problem.
I don't know what they waited so long. I mean, he got the job as a game designer there, but I don't know why they waited so long, because he worked as the game designer on the World of Warcraft DC.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Well, boys, is there anything we need to discuss more, or do we just go to part two?
Well, I think that about covers it.
Peter, give your where can people find you whenever you're posting, if you're posting.
I'm posting at nixithitgoestotown.com, and I should have a post there at the end of the year, probably, or the start of next year.
I mean, usually have an end of the year post, so.
Yeah, it's like the one thing I do regularly. It's the top 10 cards of the past year that I usually have. That's my one regular post that I have, so it'll be there sometime soon. As you, within 8 months.
Well, yeah, just, you know, casually plus minus 8 months.
Pretty much, around about. That's a pretty good time frame for me.
All right. Thanks, Peter, for showing along. This has been fun. I guess we'll move on to the part two now.
Yes, thank you. And just insert some random sound bites of me into part two to make the viewers realize that, you know, make them think that I'm there.
No, we'll just put text, deductible. And that's it.
Excellent. Brilliant. That'll be good.
Okay.
All right.
We have been preparing for this for quite a while now. We were supposed to have some guests doing it, and then that failed. And they were supposed to be recording it for a while, then some recordings failed.
Yeah.
And a lot of news came out and all that. But finally, we're going to actually get to it.
Yeah, and by preparing means just wanting to do it.
Oh, I have been actually reading it, the source material for a while. I mean, I've been reading that source material for years already, but that's, you know, beside the point. But what we have talked about, and many people have done that before, was applying Sun Tzu's Art of War to Commander. Can we actually do it, and how much can we do it? Yes. And I have given that mixture, that idea, like 2 months ago, something like that. Maybe even more.
Yeah, but then I agreed to it, and I read the
book. And the book is actually excellent. You should go read it either online or get the book yourself. Just read it, because you can apply this in business, in life, in, you know, relations with people. Maybe in Commander, if we're actually successful enough with this one.
And that was, like, quite a while ago, so I'm a bit fuzzy on all the lessons he said, but I'll try my best.
Yeah, and thing to note is that this book was written 500 BC, or AD, wait. I think it's... I cannot find it, damn it. Anywho, it's an ancient book, and I'll now have to find the info.
Yeah, and all the strategies and plans he talks about that seem mundane now, it's because he made them mundane.
It's not even that he made them mundane. All the military strategists read this book. It is 5th century BC. So 2,500 years ago, this guy wrote that. And it's still extremely applicable today. I mean, Japanese business owners, managers and all that are basically learning this by the heart, because it's so applicable to their field of work. So, shall we start the thing?
Let us start the
thing. Niksha, start the thing.
Well, since a lot more versed in this, why don't you have the option?
Okay, so Sun Tzu says that five things are governed in the art of war, the most important thing. The art of war then is governed by five constant factors to be taken into account in one's deliberations when seeking to determine the conditions in obtaining the field. So, it's the moral law, heaven, earth, the commander, and method and discipline. How I have actually, you know, transferred it to commander is the Tao or the moral law, the Tao. That would be the archetype you're playing.
Yes.
Heaven, aka time in some translations, is the mana curve. Earth or lay of the land, that's the meta you're playing in. Commander, that's A, the commander you're playing, and B, you as a pilot. And then we have the fifth meta and then discipline. That's basically the game knowledge and the deck familiarity. Those five things determine how well are you going to be playing and how much fun will you be having.
What I thought was we could both think about what commanders and what type of decks would encompass these ideas the best.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I'm already piloting that one. Alesha is built with this things in mind, because let's take Lay of the Land, aka Dirt. The deck is built just to fight things in the meta.
So you're adapting to what others are...
Yep, I mean, you saw what it runs.
Yes.
It's mostly A, my combos, B, just stopping people from doing anything until I can combo out. But not in a hard control way, more in, you know, removal and responding to your threats.
I had through it, I had a different idea. I think that the best commander to follow Sun Tzu is actually Zedru the Greatheart.
Is she?
She is, because Sun Tzu said himself, all warfare is based on deception.
It is.
And what a better way to deceive your enemy is that you hide behind the guise of, you know, great, how do you say it, well, great-hearted, I guess? Shower everyone with gifts, some good, some not as good, but still, they're gifts. And you just, you know, get something from that. And then at one point you can either combo out, go full out aggressive. There are many ways you can turn the tide then.
Sun Tzu does speak of such tactics in his book. And one of the principles is when you weak appear strong and when you strong appear weak. When there's many of you pretending like there's a few and vice versa. But I see Zedru more of as, you know, defensive commander. Well, while Alesha is more of an aggressive general.
That's where Zedru's greatest strength can... because Zedru has really good control colors. Red, white, and blue mm-hmm. are all really good at controlling. But they all can also be extremely aggressive, especially red-white.
At one point, you can just
control what others will basically think of you. You can make them attack each other, do little tricks like that, and when you see a good opportunity to strike, you just bust out some hasty dragons or angels or something like that and just start hitting everyone.
So what would be the units that would be finishing the battle in this scenario?
Well, of course...
In that imaginary deck?
Well, it's not really an imaginary. I played it once.
Mm-hmm.
So cards like Akroma, Angel of Wrath is an amazing card for that.
Mm-hmm.
Razia, Boros Archangel, even though people don't like it, I like it.
You have a soft spot for her.
I have a soft spot for original Ravnica, but we talked yeah. about that.
Yep.
It's just amazing. It's just pay 8 mana for a 6/3 flying vigilance haste. It's like, you don't win with the damage, you win with the mana investment. Because people are like, wait, you paid 8 mana for that. Yeah, you see? It appears like it's a weak play, but... it's, you know, you don't care because you're hitting them really hard.
But Would you be considering maybe to make a deck with these principles in mind?
Well, the mana curve is a bit iffy, because Zedru's mana curve at that point would a lot of early and a lot of late, but not much in the middle, because the only, well, mid-range spells would be board
sweeps. Yeah, that would fall under the category of time, right? AKA the mana curve. I mean, you could always work on that. Either include a lot of ramp, or just, you know, lower your high end.
Well, you see, the thing is, you can't ramp and really work.
I mean, you can with rocks.
So they're, yeah, rocks, but, you know, when you have your mana so, openly displayed like that, it's your opponents can take it, your opponents can kill it, and relying on that is kind of, well, it's greedy, let's just say.
Okay, let's put it like this. Let's start from top. What archetype would that be?
It would be control.
Okay. So mana curve, we would have to lower it a bit, wouldn't we?
We just
a couple of finishers and mostly defensive cards.
Exactly.
Since you're politicking and all that, basically what we're making Zedru, Zedru is a commander of basically a fort. Is that what we're trying to do right now? We're making Zedru commander of not a pillow, but an actual fort. She's making defensive warfare.
Yes. And then, the point is to drain the opponent, let's say.
And we have to now take meta in consideration. Against whom would you be playing it against?
Well, the thing is, I wouldn't really try to adapt to because if you try to adapt to the meta, then there's like a pattern somebody can see. And if there's a pattern in your action, then there's a weak action.
But this doesn't mean you need to, you know, completely adapt to the meta, but there are some things you need to take into consideration.
Oh, the only adaptation I need, playing spot removal.
That's a thing. But you also need to pick when we'll be playing this deck. Like, when Marco busts out that Kefnet or Tess busts out Prosh, maybe that wouldn't be the best time to, you know, play that kind of Zedru.
Well, yeah, against other controls, Zedru is a bit weaker, but against creature-based decks, Zedru could be really good because of the immense amount of board wipes Zedru can.
Yeah, but you also need to think, you know, about, let's say, Prosh trying to combo out, because he doesn't care about combat damage that often.
Yeah, see, that's where the blue comes in, and you get to actually counter.
So, yeah, the shell is defensive things and Razia.
There's also that shell of being a general dick and giving steel overseers to people.
I was going to say. Steel Golem also as well, right?
Or aggressive mining.
I mean, yeah, that's one way to approach the meta. If your meta is rampy, which sometimes here it is, you just tap it with aggressive mining. And you can give like a rule of law to a blue player.
Yeah, like, sure, you can have it because we're casting one spell one way or another.
Or you might not want to even give it or play it, because if it's a control player, they'll just counter one spell each of people's turns, so.
And also against the control player, you could also use the Akron Warhorse, because.
Oh yeah, definitely.
They can't really sacrifice it. Nobody's going to block it ever, also it has Defender.
That might stop the whole attacking thing, yes.
And, you know, it can't block all the soldiers, so it can't die from combat damage. And if it can die from combat damage, then it's already too late.
Yeah. Everybody has massed enough troops to kill the control player. And the leadership is under Zedru's control, and we have talked about your game knowledge and, you know, deck familiarity.
Yes.
So let's move on a bit further. Now we go to deception. Because all warfare is based on deception, as you said. And deception comes from some part politics, but mostly from combat tricks, right?
Yeah, and I would say that it comes from your general, you know, your acting through the whole gameplay. How are that, you playing yeah. your deck?
Yeah, that's point number five that we had, discipline.
So, for your deck, it would be actually combat.
Yeah, my deck has a bit more brutish approach to it, let's say. I mean, I can play politics with you know that I have spot removal in hand. I can just say that, and people will most likely be like, yeah, he has it, and maybe steer away from me. Or if they don't, I can just, you know, kill things. But on your Zedru's side, that's a bit more trickier, isn't it?
Yeah, but then again, you're playing Jeskai, so people will tend to believe you when you say that you have a spot removal, but then they are more likely to, you know, think you're bluffing. So they'll try their chances against you, because they have to.
But if they try to do something too much, you can play things like comeuppance or deflecting pawn.
Yes. And one of the one really flavorful card for this kind of play is Master Warcraft. But the problem with Master Warcraft is that it's not a really good card.
Yeah, people think it does better things than it actually does.
It's such a situational card.
So, next, how does Master Warcraft actually work?
Most of the time, it's a dead card in your hand. Because if someone's really threatening and you're afraid of him, you wipe the board. And then Master Warcraft doesn't do anything. If people have, like, not a menacing board, you still don't play Master Warcraft because it doesn't... It's really hard to actually find favorable raids.
A card that is a strict upgrade to that would be Brutal Horchief.
Yeah, but the thing about Brutal Horchief is he's black.
I mean, yeah, I'm not talking about, you know, your deck right now. Just in general.
Yeah, I know.
If you want to run Master Warcraft, just stop and see if your deck has black. And then if it does, just play Brutal Horchief. Much better results.
Because Brutal Horchief also has that clause that when they attack you,
mm-hmm.
they lose life.
No, it's when you attack other people.
When you attack, they lose life and you gain life.
Yeah, but what else can we do combat trickery? There is that thing, 4-mana instant, that you basically say everybody that was attacking you gets removed from combat, there's another combat, and other people attack other people.
Yeah, I know. That one's really good, but one of the weaknesses of that card is that it doesn't prevent attack triggers.
Sorin!
Oh man, did Sorin get out of his stone prison again?
Wait, I'm back, I had to expunge Sorin from almost the wall. Anywho, you were saying?
I was talking about that, I think it's Illusionist's Gambit.
It is. Good job.
Because I played it in Zedru, so I know.
I mean, it's a perfect deck to play then, honestly.
It is, yes. And that's actually the perfect combat trick.
You mm-hmm.
make people, like, you infuriate them, you taunt them, and then they're like, yeah, I'm coming for you next. And then they come for you, and then you're like, yes, that's what I thought.
Sorry.
I mean, that's another thing we could talk about, actually, is playing your opponent's psychological side. There's people in this game that you can just, you know, a bit more easily manipulate. Like, let's take our friend Philip, for example. We both know if there's somebody playing blue on the field, he's gunning for them. And that's the thing you can strategically implement in your plans. Like, I know that I seem, you know, that I'm a bit menacing right now, Philip, but that guy has islands.
He has untapped islands.
And then he's like, you make a good point. I'm going to go murder that person now.
Well, you see, you can use that approach because you're using Alesha.
I often play blue things, mind you that.
But I can't really because I'm the one playing blue and I'm the one that has
but
I'm giving him stuff.
That, and you're playing not blue base deck, you're playing Zedru. And in his mind, I think it's less evil than, let's say, Kepnet.
Definitely.
If there is a Kepnet on the field, and if there is a Zedru on the field, he's definitely going to go for Kepnet first.
Yeah, at first. Then he'll learn of Zedru's, which is evil.
One hope.
Anywho.
One hope.
What else can we do psychologically to mess with our opponents?
No, this is important.
Is something...
Yes, it is. Something about farts.
Okay.
It burns a pound of fat.
Apparently,
it's important.
Yeah, good.
Only if you do it 52 times in a day, though.
Sure. So...
Sun Tzu says that we should anger our opponents to, you know, cause disarray amongst them. But since this is a social format, maybe we shouldn't, you know, straight out piss off our
friends. You don't piss them off. You just tell them if you know somebody and you know their deck, then you can, like, say that, hey, they might seem not threatening, but they're a combo deck and they're going to combo out soon. So, you see, my board is... like, not threatening at all, so we might want to, soften that other guy. So,
but, Niksha, what happens when actually people don't want to play by our rules? Is there something we can do?
Yeah.
There is a really nice keyword we can use, you know, to make people do what we want. And that's called goad.
And that is, yeah, goad.
We can goad people into doing whatever we the hell we want to.
Yes, but playing Prosh. It's really simple.
What are actually good goad cards? That is Grenzo?
The thing about Grenzo is that you need a board presence for him to be really good. So for your deck, Grenzo is good, but for my deck, there aren't really any good goad cards because most of them are like single target.
But there is one really good single target goad, and that's that threaten effect.
Yeah, it threatens and goads the creature.
That's actually good beat stick.
Yeah, because you can hit someone and then they can hit you. So mm-hmm. You have to hit someone again.
They have to hit someone, that's the best part. And speaking of that, since we're using the teaching of Sun Tzu, we should maybe use resources of our opponents.
Yes, that is one of his... When you attack someone, you bring your own equipment, but you mm-hmm. use his supplies.
Basically, for every 10 kilos of grain you use of your opponents, you go like 10-15 miles, just of those 10 kilos. So what he's saying is, when you're in a foreign country, just use their resources first, and then you use up your own.
Bribery
is bullshit. However, that's actually one of the better examples. That or reanimator cards or threatened effects.
See, reanimating
or
is better.
You can actually use their resources.
You need to use their resources, actually.
Like
and mana-
using shifting borders.
Niksha, what does Shifting Borders do?
So, Shifting Borders is a really interesting card. It's 3 and a blue, instant arcane. It says, exchange control of 2 target lands. So, it's... you can effectively mana screw someone by giving them your land and you taking their land. Or, if it's a multiplayer, you can actually... if you're strategic enough, you can mana screw 2 people at once.
Or you can purposely, since it's a Zedru, and this is a strategy you can actually implement, purposely play crappy lands.
Yeah,
like Soros Path.
Yeah. And then just, you're still giving them a land in return for their land. It's just that your land isn't as good as theirs, so...
Look, bro, we'll do it like this. I'll take your Shrine to Nyx, but I will give you my Soros Path.
Or, you know, take their Command Tower.
But it's fair, it's still land for land.
Yeah, you still get mana.
Mm-hmm. And there is that creature that does the same thing, right? From Ravnica.
It is, there's a Vedalken that does
Yeah. But, and we, since we want to use our resources as much as possible, should maybe play Summon the Conjurer's Closet. Or, what's the name of the Eldrazi that bounces things?
Eldrazi Displacer.
Him.
Oh yeah, Eldrazi Displacer is also an excellent political card.
It's great on defense and on offense.
So, if they're attacking you, there's like multiple ways. You can say them, okay, you won't attack me, because if you do, you're not gonna attack. You don't even have to use like propaganda or... Ghostly Prisoner, those mm-hmm. kind of cards, you can use, like, Maze of Ith, and Eldrazi Displacer. With them two, you can remove a minimal of two creatures from combat. And they have to actually invest more resources to attack you than somebody else. So you can encourage them to attack someone else by limiting their... Well, not limiting their options, but by narrowing their options. I mean, they can attack you.
But why should they?
But, you know, you don't have to have... You don't have to tutor for Greaves to attack that other guy. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
And there is also following... you can, of course, you can use it in offensively, removing blockers, removing tokens. But you can also do it like this. Look, you have really nice ETBs. If you attack this guy, I can make those ETBs reappear again. What do you say?
But the thing is, when you are saying something like that, and those ETBs can actually target you and harm you, there's no reason for them to, you know, not target you after using that.
I mean, for the time being, if you, you know, being good on your promises, and there is still, you know, more opponents than you, they should, you know, they, most of the time, they will actually, you know, follow up.
You, of course,
choose the allies that aren't actually total douchebags, that are going to backstab you.
And... the thing about these tactics, I mean, these are all fine and dandy on paper, but the problem is, these are the tactics that you can't use against the same people twice.
I mean, yeah. Or you can actually use it more times if you know people around you, which are more susceptible to political alliances.
Or just, you know, if you're playing like four-player free-for-alls, you can play with the same people, but not the same combination of people.
Yeah.
Or not the same combination of decks. Something like that. Yeah, not the same combination of people.
And of course not the same combination of allies. Even if it's the same decks and same people.
Yeah, because I learned from my experience as a Zedru player that it's going to work once.
Mm-hmm.
And for the rest of eternity, you should be prepared for the following scenario. I play Zedru, Terminate. But, okay. I play Zedru, Wrath of God. It's an empty board. I don't care.
And
I want that Zedru dead.
That's where we come to the crux of the problem. That's why Alesha is a bit more low-key. And you've seen her, you know, play a lot of times, haven't you?
Yeah.
And she's efficient, but she's less scare-inducing than Zedru is.
I mean, Zedru isn't fear-inducing. Zedru is just infuriating.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's like people don't like politics, so...
People are like, okay, Alesha, it's here, we know what she's gonna do, what's in your graveyard, that's okay. And you can, you know, stay low tune and even be helpful to people. Oh, they play this thing, don't worry, guys, I got it. And they're like, okay, Alesha can stay for a while. And then horrible shit starts happening.
Also, the thing about Alesha, you know, she's predictable, but you use that predictability in your advantage.
Mm-hmm.
While Zedru, you don't know if he's going to counter something, you don't know if he's going to mess up with something, you don't know if he's going to donate, I don't know, Paradox Haze or something like that.
You're keeping people on their toes while I'm actually allowing them into a sense of security.
Yeah, except when they start attacking you, then... You know, you have to hit them hard and fast, or else you're also...
Or combo out, or kill their stuff, you know, I actually have options.
So, of course, all of this, what we're saying, doesn't really apply to one-on-one games, doesn't it?
Of course, because, I mean, these multiplayer tactics, no, but you can still take Sun Tzu's teachings and actually use them. Like, don't waste any unneeded resources, like you said, you know, with taking their own resources.
Or attack him where he is unprepared and appear where you are not expected.
AKA, you can use, you know, hasty creatures, lower mana curve, because if some decks need to ramp up, in the time they're ramping up, they're not doing anything. And that's when you can take advantage.
Or you can use some cards that catch people completely off guard, like Total War. I think it's Total War.
What does the card do?
It's from Ravnica. It's War Stall. Warstall is a 3 and a red enchantment that says that when a player attacks with one or more creatures, that player attacks with all creatures, or taps all creatures. I think it's taps all creatures. And whenever a player taps a land for mana, that player taps all lands he or she controls.
So, yeah, whenever it taps a mana, tap all lands, but whenever a creature attacks, everybody's attacking.
Oh, attacking, they don't have... Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes... So, it forces people to go all out, and people aren't prepared to go all out.
Yeah, your mana drops need to be tapped or else.
And if you're going to play something on your turn, you're not going to play anything on anybody mm-hmm. else's turn.
And also, when you're making plays like this, also attack their strategy. That's, again, comes from, you know, your meta knowledge. But if you know that they have a lot of really cheap spells, put a Trinisphere in your deck or something like that. Or Rule of Law.
Or if you know the combo, very few combos of their deck, then you can keep your disruption, for that moment.
Mm-hmm. So if you see one combo piece out, but not, you know, the second one, just wait.
Patience.
Mm-hmm.
Because according as circumstances are favorable, one should modify one's plan.
Yeah, battle is like water, if I remember correctly. It's never constant. A strategy is never constant. It just adapts to the shape it's in.
But I think that one of Zedru's strengths isn't just looking at this war as just one game, but across multiple games. Because Zedru, being in three colors, you can actually quite change up his general game plan
mm-hmm.
Quite a bit. So you can, like, play him and, like, splash blue for some draws and some control, but go really aggressive with the right, with the red and blue. Red and white. Maybe even switch to Rukan of the Fomori.
So, I think you're talking about something similar like this. For armies to be in the shape to fight with their opponents and not to be defeated, they need to use unorthodox and orthodox methods. Basically, you need to switch it up every once in a while.
Definitely.
That's also, again, playing to your meta. You need to know exactly what you're going to be facing, which you will actually get a hang of after a couple of games with your playgroup. Because you see that some people have some certain tendencies. Mark always goes for the control. Tess always goes for, you know, Jundi strategy. Not just pros, just Jund's strategies in general.
Her general strategy is Jundum.
Jundum out, yeah. I favor more control and combo, but it doesn't have to be blue ones. And you just like to play weird stuff, honestly.
Yeah. And but the thing is, you don't have to plan for your meta. You plan for what people are planning for you. What they mm-hmm. think you're going to do. That's what I like to think when playing Zedru.
Yeah. Because Zedru can go in several directions, but most of what it's in is bad gifts.
Yeah, most people see it as bad gifts, but then suddenly Angel.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's generals that you can actually just go with that and just make everybody confused. Like, Atraxa is really open-ended.
Yeah, most people go Super Friends or... I don't know.
Plus one counters.
But you can also go, like, Infect Control. Just put one Infect counter on someone and let it grow.
Or you can just confuse anybody and use all the stupid enchantments that have some weird counters on them.
Or, here's an idea. You build an energy.
Oh.
Now that's next level. No one's expecting an energy deck in Commander.
Personally, when I'm talking about it, I like open-ended Commanders. Once you sit on a feet, just in random people, they don't know what's actually coming for them. Like Alesha again. There's at least 4 or 5 styles you can play with her. And when you sit with a random opponent that has Alesha, you are not sure what's going
to
be.
Well, you're going to assume it's some reanimate.
But with Alesha, it's mostly tokens. That's the most often build.
Uh-huh. I've never...
Because you mostly play against mine, and mine is an exception. But no, the cheapest and easiest way is just, you know, build... what's the CGM Commander and things like that. Ponyback Brigade and put Purphoros, those things. It's really easy to pilot. It's really easy to build, you know, and that's the most often build. And then you, of course, have thematic like, you know, Samurai or Voltron or Stacks or that and taxes. But when you sit down, you're not sure what you're going to actually see. Mm. Unlike, let's say, Kaldia. You play against Kaldia G. Wonder what's going to happen.
I was just reading this again, and this one sounds so familiar to me. So it says, if your opponent is of choleric temper, seek to irritate him. Pretend mm-hmm. to be weak, that he may grow arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
This reminds me of a few years back when I played against someone. I used my fun Izzet build that had a lot of random effects and like that. Of course, mm-hmm. Galactrode, because Galactrode is like by far one of my favorite creatures.
Mm-hmm.
It's partly because of nostalgia, partly because I...
Yeah.
And I was playing with that deck, and I got crushed. And then my opponent was like, "Aha! What a weak deck! Is this even a challenge?" And then I was taunted at that point, and my opponent grew arrogant. And then like, okay, yeah, sure. So this was my fun deck. Now let's play a real game. And that's where the 10 post Eldrazi came. it was 10 post because I had 2 Vezuvas.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, my opponent was kind of shocked when a turn 4 Emrakul landed and destroyed everything.
I mean, you can always be like, when you know you have a thing that's going to, you know, crush the strategy in hand, then just draw it. Draw the card, just look at it and be like, your turn. And then just let them slide into that trap.
Oh yeah, that's when, like on the Pro Tour, I was watching the finals when, Darossa who fainted a shock in him? He did. He was like, he went to attack, and then before blockers were declared, he was shuffling this one card in his, he like wanted to cast him, he just tap one red mana.
Mm-hmm.
And he was thinking about a target, he even extended the card forward. But never revealed it. And then he would put it back and untap that because he decided not to.
Yeah.
And he was actually just playing with a Hazoret.
Do you want me to one you up? So it was back in 1995, something like that, 96. And Mike Long is playing against Mike Justice. And one of them is playing a Prost Bloom deck, you know, the combo deck. Mm-hmm. And his one win condition in when after his sideboard was one drain life, which got exiled.
Oh, I know that one.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but
go on.
But he kept going through the motions, like, you know, I'm going to make all this mana, and his opponent just looks at him. Okay. And he just picked up, you know, his cards, and he just had that one drain life. Or the infamous incident we talked about with LSV forgetting to put Tendrils of Agony in his Storm deck.
And he still said, what was it? It was that... he was going through his deck with... what's it called?
What?
Was it that? The card that says that you reveal the top card of your library, you lose life, and repeat that process.
Mm-hmm, ad nauseum.
Ad nauseum, yeah.
It could be.
Or it was something... else, but I do remember...
Oh, no, I think it was the older build of the...
Yeah.
Storm.
And, I don't know who it was, but it was that situation. The win condition was exiled or in the graveyard, and they were, like, revealing the top card, and I was like, look, I'm just going to do this until I reach my... So...
I mean, he wasn't lying. But so, yeah, LSV... usually, when you make blasts like that, you actually have to have confidence. And you have to pay attention to the tells you're making. Because often, people will make slight changes in their behavior, and you'll be like, okay, this is weird, what the hell? And that can you tell you're just, you know, BSing with your removal.
Yeah, or another trick is they want to go to attacks, and then you pick up your pen like you're going to write down the life. And then they attack you like, hey, he's going to write down the life. He doesn't.
Also, what's a really good strategy when you're playing control? Somebody casts a spell. You take the spell, look at it. okay, I'm not gonna control that. I'm not gonna counter that, and just let it resolve.
Yeah, and but maybe not even say that you're going to not counter that because.
Oh no! You say that, and you don't even have to have a counter in your hand.
Yeah, I was more like, just you look at it, and then you say, yeah, sure, pass.
No, this is more implied because they're like, oh, he has a counter, damn it. Now I have to play around it.
Or does he? Is he bluffing?
Huh. That's the thing. As long, you just need to go inside their head.
You just have to throw them slightly off balance.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be, you know, obvious. You're trying to manipulate them, but just, you know, slowly and easily.
So, yeah, that's basically, if he's taking his, give him no rest. If his forces are united, separate. So
yeah, if two guys are being really good and the good allies on the table, just, you know, wedge a little bit of you know, spike between them.
Yeah, you try your best.
Just, you know, I mean, yeah, sure, he's been a good ally, but, you know, as soon as he doesn't need you anymore, he'll stab you. But not me, I'm a good guy, see? No stabbing on my part. Yeah, I'm just like, here gaining some life, drawing cards.
Have you ever considered what he's offering? I might be able to.
Yeah.
How about this Howling Mine, for instance?
You'll be drawing even more cards. Oh, wait. It is the Will of Zidru. I'll be here drawing some cards, gaining some life.
Your plan in... the way you lay your plans is through being more aggressive.
More aggressive. B, being the kind of table who can actually remove stuff. Any type of permanent, I can actually just remove it. And people have started to, you know, to know that.
Yeah, I kind of tried to do that when I was playing Damia all those years back. It was years, actually,
yeah.
It didn't really work out because it's so tiring when you're the only person at a four-player table.
Yeah, but the people I'm playing with, I mean, you know, the playgroup, everybody's packing some sorts of spot removal.
But there are still...
Oh, yeah, I mean, when we play in the shop, you can see anything from actually, you know, well-tuned decks to people just...
Well, not really well-tuned decks, because those people with well-tuned decks go exclusively...
Oh, no, that's almost competitive levels. The things that we have are, you know, well-tuned. Alesha is well-tuned. She's not, you know, a competitive deck, but she's, you know, well-tuned.
Well, ninjas are well-tuned as well. I mean, I searched for all the ninjas, and I put all the ninjas. That means it's well-tuned.
Oh, no, that deck, even though you joke, is actually, you know, well-tuned. It has, you know, good balance of removal, card draw, mana ramp, convert the mana cost of cards.
Yeah, it's a low curve, and it can draw a lot.
Mm-hmm. You can actually, you know, get all the resources.
Yep.
Test, Machka. I'm not sure if the cat is going to escape or not. Just give me a minute. Okay, I'm back.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Now give me a second. I just have to turn off my mobile.
Mm-hmm.
So we can wrap up with first chapter, right?
Yeah.
We've said pretty much everything.
Mostly, but there is one thing I want to just mention. While you're playing your decks and playing your cards and all that, own up to your own mistakes. Because I see people just blaming everything, you know, he drew this, this guy played that, I couldn't draw any lands, didn't have enough mana. Just, you know, first own the mistakes you did, because everybody's making tons of mistakes while playing. I mean, we mentioned at the beginning of the night, you know, just attacking with Hazaret and having two cards in hand. And that's on pro level. Everybody's doing mistakes, you just, you know, have to be much more cautious and wary of your own mistakes. Just seek them out and try to repair them as much as possible.
Yeah, but that's more under general gameplay ethic.
Mm-hmm, but that comes to under the, you know, guideline number 5 that we talked about, discipline.
Yes.
You have to discipline yourself.
Or, of course, you can use the saltiness in your favor. Because I know for a fact that people try to make me purposely salty, so I can actually use that to my advantage.
Niksha, it's not that difficult to get you salty.
No, it's not, but I might actually use that.
You should.
I should.
But there is this one last thing. So basically what Sun Tzu said. If you know yourself and know the enemy, you'll win all your battles, right?
Yeah.
That's not just, you know your meta, but that is actually, be honest to yourself and sort your shit out. See what are you doing wrong in all the games.
See where you are faulty and seek mm-hmm. to perfect that.
Like, goddamn, we're faulty, but, you can actually work on that.
You know, being bad at something is just the first step in being kind of sort of good at something.
I mean, we've been playing Magic for, like 14 years. I'm getting okay with Magic.
But still.
But you also need to figure out what the hell do you want to do in this game. I personally am happy being EDH player and / entertainer with this podcast and all that. That's the role I'm happy to fulfill, and I'm just going to stick with that. I don't, plan to go to Pro Tour.
I want to do kind of a little bit of everything. I'm not into Legacy. Because monies. I would love to go to a Grand Prix. There is one coming up, like this month or the next. I think it's this month, that I just might go.
Where is it?
I don't know, but it's not that far away.
So it's what, Vienna, Milan, or something like that?
It might be.
It's usually one of those two.
I'll have to double check on that, but I think it's also that it's modern, so I might actually, if I'm confident enough, I might play in the...
Either that or just, go to side events, whatever.
Yeah, go grind some side events.
Play some mean commander, if judges allow your proxies of the sorts.
And start my toil for...
Oh, I'm so happy that you posted those altars of your swords on the Facebook page.
Proxies,
whatever. But they're the best proxies you can ever find.
Yeah, it's because I want to customize my proxies. When I proxied a complete mono black Eldrazi deck when it was becoming popular, I proxied like every single one of those cards. There were like 40 cards in the deck were proxies, and I just had to draw something. And of course, like a playset of Thought Seizes, and each and every one of them has a different art.
So yeah, we are done with the episode.
I just wanted to summarize our general strategies. How do we think? How do we execute this Link Plans chapter?
Okay.
So, with you, you're all about, you summarize yourself.
So, how the battle plans go from the early on to the end game?
No, just your general.
So, it's laying some early pressure, basically, being faster than opponents and catching them unawares, while controlling the resources they can manage and they can have, and that'll bring us, swift and decisive victory.
While my plan is being weird.
Like, I mean,
more on the control side, but just, weird.
Yeah, while you're going to go on the way to actually, prolong the game, I just want to avoid the long game if possible.
Yeah, that's the core difference. So is mm-hmm. that you prefer shorter games while I prefer...
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to work as hard as hell to make it a short game.
Yep, and we'll see who'll deplete their resources faster in doing that.
Bum, bum, bum. I mean, actually, you should actually make a deck like that, and we can play against it.
I have traumas from playing Zedrus.
Yeah, but you're playing it with different people.
Okay, maybe, okay. I did find some more casual people, so maybe they'll be okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Just I'm not gonna use Steel Overseer.
Mostly
because I don't have any more of those super Zedru hate cards. I mean,
that's a good reason to not play that card.
Yep. So, that about covers it. We finally did this, and we're mm-hmm. going to go over the other chapters in later episodes, because this one has been...
Yeah, maybe not, you know, next episode, but in near future.
Yeah, we almost have 2 hours, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
This
took
a bit more of the time than we...
Plus that, and we started a bit later than usual.
And that, and the power outage.
And the power outage and everything, but this has been episode 46. We're going...
Yeah, it was.
We're coming near to that 50 number. That's going to be sweet. I have no idea what the hell we'll be doing for episode 50, but it's going to be sweet.
Yeah, we already know it's going
to... Maybe.
Perhaps.
But yeah, you can find all of our information in the show notes, Facebook, Twitter, Tapped Out, Puketrade, yada, yada, yada. You have a bunch of links in the show notes, and if you have any ideas, you know, for episode 50 or just any impressions of Sun Tzu, just feel free to let us know through any of the contact info.
Yep.
As I said, yeah, Nixon?
And as always, the Emperor protects.
The Emperor protects.